seem to have a battery. So with any luck. All right. So the Upstate Theater Company is a nonprofit community theater group, puts on plays, and there's its balance sheet. And how do we account for these things? We're going to be writing to write teeth accounts and presumably eventually combine them into an income statement, which combines into a new balance sheet. All right? So first thing happens is an anonymous donor gives them a $1,000 gift. Where does that go? What kind of a tea account is that?
Cash.
Which side of the? I'm not sure you're allowed to use that word in this class, but all right. Left. And this is cash. But there's got to be a balancing item, right? Double entry bookkeeping, you've got to always balance. So what's the other T account you want? Where do we record this? But part of our accounting system gets $1,000. Suppose we were going all the way through. Suppose we were doing a balance sheet. Where would that end up on the balance sheet? What would be the $1,000 to balance that $1,000 cash? What? Equity is where it would finally end up, right? How about income? Seems like the obvious place to put it. It's income. Because income is eventually going to go to the income statement, which is then eventually going to go to the balance sheet. Make sense? Pretty sure that's the right way of doing it. Not being an expert in all of that. $1,000 is spent on costumes and sets. Where does that go? What two places? Where on cash? The right hand side. $1,000? Costumes? Nope. Donation? Just keep track of what all these things are. And somewhere else it's got to go. Is it really an expense? Are we really $1,000 worse off?
It's more like inventory.
That looks like more like inventory to me. We've got an asset, right? Assets. We've decreased an asset here. Cash is an asset. And we're increasing another asset, which is inventory. So, $1,000 costumes. Makes sense. All right? Makes sense? Over the course of the year, the company sells $3,000 of tickets for the year's performances. Where would those $3,000 go? What two places? Cash is one, obviously. And what balance is that? Income, right? If they were tickets for next year's performance, we'd have to do something more complicated, right? Because we would then have, but this is over the course of the year, and so they're getting the money in, they're putting on shows and so forth. It's not as if at the end of the year they owe people a bunch of performances for that. All right? Over the course of the year, the company spends $1,000 on the rental of auditoriums and other costs associated with putting on the year's productions. So where are the two places that goes? Say 1,000? Yeah. So cash goes down 1,000. And what would we call the balancing thing? cost of operations, expenses, something like that, which is eventually going to go through to the income statement, right? So let me call it, I'll call it expenses, maybe you would call it cost of operation, anything along those lines, and it's got to be on this side, just as on an income statement, the right-hand side is good, on a cash statement, the left-hand side is good, and on the expenses side, the left-hand side is bad, and the right-hand side is good. All right? I'm quite sure how you would have a right-hand side over there, but next thing that happens is towards the end of the year, they launch a new initiative to make advanced sales, and they get $1,000 in advanced sales. And so where does that go? Where's the obvious place we're going to have to put it first? Cash, right? $1,000 in cash. And what balance is that $1,000 asset? Is there a liability here somewhere? I don't think so. I think an accounts payable is when you owe people money, yeah?
Well, would be a liability. Like, since it's an advanced sale, you don't have to show.
There clearly is a liability which consists of their obligation to provide shows next year to people. What I'm talking on at the moment is the name of, there is a term for those, and I'm just trying to remember what, see if I can remember what the term is for here. They seem to be referring to it as deferred income, so I guess that's probably the right term. So deferred income meaning that it's income that you still have to earn. And that was, I think, $1,000 goes there. Deferred income is basically, I think, a liability. Yes?
Well, because you don't need to memorize all the accounting terms as well.
No, you need to understand the logic. But if instead of calling it deferred income, you call it obligation to put on shows next year, I don't care. We're not training to be accountants. And if we were, you would forget all of that long before you needed use of it. At least in my experience, once you understand an idea, you usually can keep it for a long time. Whereas memorizing factual details, it usually isn't worth doing, and therefore you level up and you need it. Or we ask an accountant to tell you or something. So no, I don't care if you know that, but I do care that you understand that in doing this, you're always putting one side, one thing on the left of one T and one on the right of another, and understand in a general sense what those different T's represent. Make sense? So it really is a conceptual more than that. So that then, look at my notes here. Next question is, by the way, why are we doing it this way? And the basic answer is that we're going to want next year to be able to get rid of this, that is to put $1,000 over here, which will cancel it, and that's ultimately going to be balancing expenses that are going into putting on those shows. Costumes don't last forever, so how are we going to handle either this year or in future years the fact that they're wearing out? So let's assume that they last 4 years. So assume that we're depreciating at 25% each year. Where are the places where that $1,000 worth of costumes? So where is that $250 for this year going to go? Expense sounds like one sensible place for it to go.
$250 depreciation, and what balance is that?
What?
Actually, I got that right, yes. What balance is that $250? Inventory, right. Here's the inventory, and the inventory is down by $250. All right? Make sense? So that notice that this is on the right-hand side of that T and on the left-hand side of that T. In general, though, I think you will find in many contexts that it's useful to have some mechanical ways of checking for simple mistakes, which is what I was just doing, making sure it was a right hand and a left hand. Do any of you have a background in physics or engineering or things like that? Yes. Because what I was thinking of is keeping track of units. That if you're doing a physics problem, it is useful not just to write down the numbers, but to say, well, this is feet per second, this is seconds for which we're doing this, this is, and so forth. And if you end up with an equation at the end where 73 feet equals 100 seconds, you know you've made a mistake. It's dimensional analysis, I guess, is the technical term. And this is sort of the accountant's equivalent of that, of you know you've made a mistake if you don't have each pair balancing. So now the year ends. And at the end, what do we have? What's happening to cash? We started out with $2,000 of cash. So let's close out our books. And what is our final cash? How much has our cash changed? We've received $5,000. We've spent $2,000. So how much is the change up? Plus 3,000, right? So we start out with 2,000. So our cash account is now plus $3,000. And how are we going to balance that? We're going to balance that by observing what? That $3,000 is represents what in the statements that are eventually going to go into the balance sheet? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what?
Income,
right?
Because we're going to have an income statement as well as a cash statement. The income statement eventually flows to the balance sheet. So, income statement, call it revenue or something, $3,000. We shouldn't really say balance because we're not doing a key account, but the same thing shows up in more than one place. We can then add up the costumes and so forth, and those are our inventory, and what's happened to our inventory?
Up by 750.
So, wait a minute, I've got something. I have something else here. Okay. Sorry, I think my notes are wrong. All right, so the inventory goes up by, just note this, I'm sure it's going to have to go eventually into the statement there, but at the moment it's plus 750. And that's it. We had an inventory there at 3,000, so the total inventory is going to be 3,750. Put this number up here, just to keep track of it. That was 3,000 originally, and the cash statement was what, 2,000 originally? So therefore, our total cash is going to be 5,000. Total inventory is going to be, I'm not sure if the accountant does it this way, but it seems right. And we then have expenses, revenue, income minus expenses. And what are our expenses? Our expenses are $1,250. Wait a minute. I have income there. I'm saying three. Oh, that's the cash. But our total income is $4,000.
Right.
Income is $4,000.
some of which is cash and some of which isn't. Our expenses are $1,250. Right. Expenses are $1,250. So that makes a net there of $2,750. Great. Happy so far? And that $2,750 then is going to explain what happens to our total surplus. And when we write up the new version of this, I left out the bank loan, which was from before, so you would want to, on the liabilities and surplus, your liabilities now include the deferred income. That's a liability. I think that's the only liability that's increased. And so you've got, I guess, a 5,000. So let me try to redo. Let's look at what the statement looks like now. Assets are cash. How much cash do we now have? 5,000, is that right? I think that's right. Tell me if I'm making a mistake. $5,000 cash now. Because we got 3,000 more and we shared out with 2,000. And costumes and sets. How much costumes and sets do we have? We started out with 3,000 at the beginning of the year, and how much did that change by? That was inventory, remember? How much of our inventory increased? $750, right? Not the full amount because we depreciated something. So that's $3,750. I apologize for my poor handwriting. Are there any other assets? I don't think so. So therefore, total assets are $8,750. I can just guess that when I finish this process, the numbers aren't going to match. I'm going to have to figure out what I missed. $8,750, or where our arithmetic was wrong. And liabilities and surplus. Liability and surplus. We have bank loan is still there. Haven't paid off any of it. That's $4,000. And in addition to that, we have deferred income, which is another $1,000. Any other liabilities? I don't think so. And so what has happened? So that's a total of $5,000. This is $8,750. So what is our surplus? Fundamental equation tells us our surplus is what? $3,750. And does the change in surplus make sense? Well, we had a this is not working, is it? Have I upped $1,000? I've lost $1,000 somewhere. What? What was that?
The rental, the auditorium.
Right, that was expenses. But those expenses, yes, they went over there.
That makes sense.
But the numbers aren't adding up correctly, are they? Because I'm claiming that the surplus. No, we had a surplus before, though. Of course, we had a surplus of 1,000, that's why. Surplus of 1,000 plus 2,750 is 3,750. So we've got it right.
All right,
everybody happy? So that's how we work through. So if we look, so one question is, who would want to know? Who are people to whom this information might be important in this imaginary scenario where you're, say, the manager of this theater company?
Investors.
Investors. This is a nonprofit.
Creditors.
Potential creditors. Maybe we want to roll over that bank loan. Maybe it's going to expire, and they'd like to know, are we burning up our money? In which case, if we say, not only are we not burning up our money, look, our surplus actually went up this year.
So that's some evidence. Who else might want to know? For a non-profit.
Employees.
What?
Employees.
Employees might, I think, given that this is a theater company, presumably they're all desperate actors who are willing to act for practically nothing, and maybe subsidize them if they have to. There are a few professions, and I'm afraid acting and music are two of them, where so many people want to do them for fun that they tend to drive down the return, and a few extraordinarily good people can make a very comfortable living, but most people don't. I knew a professional actress at one point. I think she supported herself partly by waiting tables, as I remember, and most of her acting was things like trade shows where they put on skits and things. So another possibility might be donors. After all, we got that nice $1,000 at the beginning, and if you're a donor, you might want to say, well, look, are these people who are basically splurging and are incompetent, and each year more and more money goes down the drain, why should I dump my money there too? Now, that's a little tricky, because you also would say, well, are these people who are really, you know, making money hand over fist, they don't need my money, they're doing just fine, but somewhere in there would be useful information for the potential donor. And you might also imagine that your donor might be not a private person, but a government arts agency of some sort, where again, they might not unreasonably say, we'd like to see your accounts, we'd like to see some evidence that you know what you're doing before we give you tax money for this. So those are all possibilities. So if we want to summarize what we've done, we had the donation, which was an asset, which eventually got added to equity, only it's called surplus because it's a nonprofit, going through income. We had another asset, which was converted from one asset to another, namely from $1,000 of cash into $1,000 of costumes, from cash into inventory. We then had income, which was in the form of cash for tickets, and that got balanced on the income side of the T account, and will eventually, of course, go into the income statement, and thus eventually made through that finally to our asset and liability statement. And the expenditures are balanced by expenses somewhere. There are expenses. And it's the assets are, an asset was balanced by a liability to the future, deferred income, and depreciation reduces an asset and goes in as an expense. Although that makes sense? Yes, no, maybe? All right. So I think that covers what I wanted on that. So let me then go back to the matching principle, of which we had only one example here, namely deferred income. And the basic idea of the matching principle is that you would like to allocate revenue costs and benefits and costs, as it were, to the same, that are connected to each other to the same time period. So if possible, if you have revenue, you'd like to end up with that revenue showing up in your accounts in the year when you earn that revenue. So in this case, rather than treating this as $1,000 of income, which would have raised our surplus in our income statement, we say, no, we got $1,000 in cash, but there's a matching liability which wipes out that $1,000, so that for the moment it doesn't show up in our bottom line at all. But then next year, we get to put $1,000 here, and that will in effect be balancing some set of costs that are associated with putting it differently. As initially, when you balance this here, it goes straight into income. Right? Next year, we'll have $1,000 here because we wiped out this obligation because we put on our plays, and that'll be $1,000 in next year's income. Right? Then there will be expenses, obviously, which will end up getting subtracted from that for our income statement, and will eventually flow in. So I guess that's... So one problem this raises is revenue should be allocated for the period when effort is spent in generating it, and expense should be generated for the period in which the benefit from it will contribute to income. So suppose we have expenses in year one and income in year two, or income in year one and expenses in year two. How do we decide whether we move one of them forward or one of them back? Any guesses? I'm not sure if it ultimately answers the question. I think there is at least a reasonable answer. How would you decide whether what we ought to do was to take this as income and then put in an item on the other side? We could have, instead of doing this, we could have put in an item for obligations. Instead of calling it a deferred income, we could have taken its current income and said, but we also have a cost this year, and that cost this year is the obligation to put on a place next year. We're doing it the other way around. Why might it make sense to do the old, as it were, the old calculation of profit and loss from next year's things next year instead of this year? Yep.
Because that's when we'll perform the actual services.
Well, except that we receive the income with the actual income this year. That is why, how do we, we clearly want to combine them, but how do we decide whether to move the income forward as we're doing or the cost back?
You move it one way or the other depending on where the actual services happen.
Well, maybe, I don't know. That's one way of doing it. But suppose we were trying it the other way. Suppose we said, no, we want everything in this year. And we want to be able to tell people who are curious about our accounts how much our surplus changed. And what our surplus changed by? It changed by a plus $1,000 minus what it's going to cost us to deliver those things next year. What's the problem with that solution? Just to think of it in information terms, as it were, rather than accounting terms. When someone says, how well are you doing? You say, well, we took in $1,000 as well as everything else. Well, that's very good. Any costs associated with that? And said, yeah, the costs, there are going to be some costs. What's the problem with telling us what our net, telling them what our net is and therefore how our surplus has changed?
We don't know what the costs are.
That's right. So the one possible basis for doing it is to try to put it in a time when you've got the relevant information. And that obviously will often be an argument for deferring it on the grounds that we, the information we have this year we'll still have next year, but information we're going to have next year we won't have yet. So that would be one possible way. So one might put it, going back to the answer somebody gave, if there's an unambiguous date for when it happens, you could put it there, but other than that, you might also try to put it where we'll have the information. And in the case of accounts receivable, all right, the accounts receivable, we do the other direction. The accounts receivable, we don't have the money yet, but in the accounting purpose, we acted if we did. Well, ordinarily, you believe all your accounts receivable will be paid, and therefore, you do know the amount of your accounts receivable. You know that those companies owe us $6,000 for the goods we delivered this December. They're going to pay in January. They've always paid up before. We assume they're going to pay this time, so we can treat that as a real item in the accounts. All right? Makes sense, maybe. Look at this. My notes are not detailed enough, but on figure 4.6, as I remember, there were 4.6 is the oil one, which is looking at LIFO and FIFO. And I should have looked at this before, but I remember from last time I taught it that they're missing something in this calculation. Let's see. $1,000 purchase at $1 a gallon balances, $1,000 purchase at $2 balances. No, maybe not. Yeah, I don't remember what it is. I have some note that there was a problem with that figure, and I thought I remembered concluding they left out the account. Discover it, let me know. But oh, there's no income statement on this. Is that right? They've got cash, they have cost of goods sold, but they don't have the what it's supposed to be doing in any case is showing you how you can handle the LIFO business. What you're doing there is you've got a bunch of gallons of oil. They're all in the same tank. They aren't distinguishable, but some of it's $1 oil and one of it's $2 oil. And then you simply have to have a consistent accounting rule, which either says the first in, first out, so we're treating it as if the first gallons we sell are the gallons we bought first, so we, for accounting purposes, they're at the price we paid for them. And the alternative rule is last in, first out, LIFO, and that says what we bought most recently is what we assume we sold most recently, and therefore it's at that price. That's sort of fairly straightforward business. Let me go on to talk about the claim that accounting has a, quote, conservative bias. Because I think that's a somewhat misleading statement, in part because conservative is a highly ambiguous term. Not just politically, but in other contexts, it means quite a lot of different things. So, if they say that it's a conservative bias, what does that mean? It sounds sort of as though it means that you want to err in the direction of underestimating things. But is that really true? Does the accounting rule consistently err in the direction of giving you a lower bound to the value of something, or the profits, or the equity, or anything of that sort? Can you give me an example where following strict accounting rules would greatly overestimate the equity of firm hand? What?
People might not pay you all your expectations.
One example might be, now strictly speaking, if you think the odds are better than even that they're not going to pay your account receivable, then you're supposed to write it off. Yep?
If you purchased real estate, for example, at like $1 million and the real estate depreciated to $500,000.
Except the depreciated is a misleading term, it fell in value. That in depreciation you're supposed to write off, as it were. That goes into the accounting. But if you bought it at the peak of the boom here, and it then fell in half, I don't know if it's that much, but there have been large changes, accounting rules say purchase price is what does it. Or imagine that you bought a brand name. All right? Imagine that you said, Ford's brought out this wonderful new car, it's obviously going to be a bestseller, and we'd like the right to use the name of that car on our motorcycle, because it's going to be a really big asset. And so we're going to bring out the Edsel line of motorcycles. All right. Well, for accounting purposes, you paid Ford $50 million for the right to call your motorcycle Edsel. You did that before you knew the Edsel was going to be a flop. And so the result is that on the sort of standard rules, that's an asset. Now, I don't know. There may be, again, you'd have to ask an accountant, but there's some procedure where at some point you could write off an asset as having become worthless, but the normal rule is not that. So in what sense is it a conservative estimate? In what sense is it a fair summary of accounting rules to say they're giving a conservative estimate for what they're estimating? Let's look at a different mistake. Let us suppose that you bought some assets for $1,000 for $10,000 in 1950 and sold them for $15,000 in 1990. By accounting rules, what's happened? You made or lost money? In fact, have you made or lost money? If you're a stockholder trying to decide whether you think well of this president who did this, have you made or lost money? From 1950 to 1990. What?
You may not have made money at all.
Oh, you lost a lot of money. Price more than doubled during that period. Right? So that one of the problems is that accounting normally is done in terms of dollars, but dollars are not really a fixed value, right? I remember one of the times I was very irritated at Consumer Reports was that Consumer Reports had an article on mortgages a long time ago. And the question is, what you can buy mortgages on your